Welcome to Conversations. On today's program, we'll talk about one woman's efforts to treat poverty, sexism, and AIDS in West Africa, one child at a time, with Episcopal priest Elizabeth Geitz. Thanks for spending some time with us this weekend. I'm Liz Summers. Join us as we look at issues that affect individuals, families, our community, and the world. My guest in this half hour is the Reverend Canon Elizabeth Geitz to talk about one woman's efforts to put faith into action in West Africa by helping children there overcome AIDS, poverty, and sexism. Hello, Elizabeth. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Hello, Liz. I'm delighted to be on your show. Thank you for asking me.
My guest is one of three American women who put their faith into action in a remote village in West Africa and proved that we can change our world for the better, one person at a time. They made a sabbatical journey to an orphanage in Cameroon to visit a woman who was considered by many to be the Mother Teresa of Africa, Sister Jane Monka. At the orphanage, the Good Shepherd home, they were able to witness firsthand the ongoing effort to save children from the ravages of poverty and sexism. Since her trip to Cameroon, she has spent 2.5 years researching how Americans might partner with the people of Africa in a way that truly matters, because she believes it is nothing less than a matter of life and death for orphan children in countries like Cameroon. The Reverend Canon Elizabeth Geitz is an Episcopal priest, the author of numerous books, and is co-editor of Women's Uncommon Prayers. She writes about changing hearts and changing the world in the book I Am That Child. Her website is elizabethgeitz.com. The last name is spelled G-E-I-T-Z. First of all, Elizabeth, tell us a little bit more about Sister Jane Monka, this Mother Teresa of Africa, and why she came to America back in 2003 in the first place.
Oh, she is one of the most amazing women I have ever met. She was originally a contemplative nun in the Presbyterian Church. I didn't know that they had nuns, but they did. And she was walking along the streets of the capital of her country, which was Yaoundé in Cameroon, and she noticed that one child after another were lifting their arms to her, begging to be saved. So she talked to one of these children, and then she went back the next morning, and there were 10 children who had no place to sleep and nowhere to go. So she went back to her mother superior and said, I want to help these children. Their parents died of AIDS, and they are all alone. They are on the streets, and they are going to die. And she said, I'm sorry, that's not what we do. We're contemplatives. We pray. So she said, all right, I'm going to found my own order. I've got to figure out how to save these children. So literally with a dream in her heart, a vision in her head, and $25 in her pocket, she boarded a plane for America and came here and studied how to start her own order.
Wow.
Then she went back to Cameroon, and that's exactly what she did.
Like you said, she's quite a character. She's very strong and proud and larger than life. I mean, it's amazing in the first place that she came to America with $25 in her pocket and this goal, but then to accomplish setting up and running this orphanage while being up against all kinds of obstacles. Tell us a little bit about the backdrop, or maybe I should say the way of life of corruption that exists in Cameroon. It's a different way of doing business there, huh?
Yes, it's a different way of doing business. When she decided that she wanted to start the orphanage, the neighbors did not want AIDS orphans in their community, in their neighborhood. Even though the children themselves did not have AIDS that she took in initially, the people of Cameroon felt that they were tainted somehow, that AIDS was caused by witchcraft, that their parents had died as a result of this witchcraft spell, and that the children were infected with it in some way, or affected with it. So people actually tried to poison her to get rid of her when she tried to establish the orphanage. Women have a very different role in a country like Cameroon, and the fact that she is a strong woman who is really a firestorm is something that people will fight against in her country. After the book was written, a number of people got together and raised money to build a dormitory for the children, and she had to deal with the fact that thieves would steal the cables and steal the building supplies and all of that. Mm. So to say that she has had an amazing number of obstacles is really an understatement.
Yeah. Now, you and two other women were so captivated by Sister Jane and what she was wanting to accomplish there that you went to Cameroon. And largely your book is about your trip there, your experiences there. Why, first of all, did you decide to go, and what were you expecting to find out?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the reason that we ended up, or that I ended up going, is explained in the book, I Am That Child, in a great deal of depth. But basically, it's something that had always been in the back of my mind. From the minute I saw Ms. Lillian Carter one morning on the Today Show, 20 years before I went, in an African village with children, I said, I think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I was given a sabbatical, as you said, and I ended up going. Now, I went because two things. I had met Sister Jane, and her love and inspiration is unusual, mm-hmm. and I'd never met anybody like her. And also because I had decided to sponsor a child in her orphanage. For $30 a month on our website, goodshepherdhome.org, people can sponsor one of these children for just $30 a month. And 100% of the money goes directly to them. So I had a relationship with a child, and I got to know him through letters that I could give and send to him once a year. That's all it was. But once a year, I got updates from him and his picture, and he got updates from me. And I wanted to meet him. I wanted to see him. I wanted to hug him. So that's why I went.
Was it overwhelming to see the degree of poverty that exists in that part of Africa? I mean, can anyone who goes there be really equipped at the overload of sensations that must hit you all at once when you finally not only just landed in Cameroon, but finally made the arduous journey to the orphanage?
Well, you can't really prepare for it. I had worked in the inner city in Trenton, New Jersey for 5.5 years before I went to seminary. And so I was familiar with working with a population in a culture very different than my own, and really the worst of poverty that America has to offer. So I had experience of 5.5 years of doing that. However, when you land in a developing nation, it is very different than the poverty in America. And, you know, I say in the book that as I was taking the 8-hour drive from the airport to the orphanage, I felt as if I were in the middle of a book, in the middle of a novel. Mm-hmm. And I was just gazing around and learning and taking it all in. And yes, it's a tremendous amount to absorb. And really, it took me the several years of research after I got home to truly absorb everything that I had seen and heard. It is a sensory overload, but I took a tape recorder with me, a digital recorder. And if it had not been for that, I would have forgotten a great deal of it, because it's just so much hitting you at once.
Yet you say these people, especially the children, exhibit such joy and happiness. It seems so incongruous when you look at the backdrop of poverty and AIDS that is all around them.
It is. What struck me more than anything else is the depth of the spirituality of almost everyone I met in Africa compared to the spirituality of those of us in a first world country. It's almost as if they have much less getting in the way of their relationship to their divine creator than we do. And the children in the orphanage are filled with joy because their lives literally have been saved.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel themselves to be very lucky. When I was there in 2008, two or three of them slept in one, you know, part of a bunk bed. Now we have a dormitory for them, and they actually have their own bed, which is an amazing luxury for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they look around them at the children on the streets and consider themselves to be very lucky. Their education is paid for, their clothes, you know, all the things that they need. They work very hard. They all have chores. They work very hard in the orphanage, but they're grateful. And, you know, to hear them singing their prayers and singing their blessings before a meal of rice and beans, for which they are so grateful, is very humbling.
As a matter of fact, the boy that you have been a sponsor to made brooms that they would that he would sweep the dirt road with, correct?
Right, right. Well, every child in the home, and I think this is an amazing, wonderful discipline for them, every child has a chore. So they actually get up at 5:30 in the morning, and they do their prayers, and they do their chore, whatever it is. Now, the sweeping the road thing, I finally decided, in part, is a way to keep the little ones busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
sure.
It's like they're 8 years old, 8 year old boys, and what are you going to do with them? And so they're out there sweeping the road, which is dirt, mm-hmm. with these brooms. But it's a discipline for them.
And he made the brooms.
He made them himself. In the summertime, these children go home and live with extended families. Now, the reason they don't live with them all year long is they cannot afford to keep them. They cannot afford to feed them. They cannot afford the school fees. So they're not able to live there. In fact, unfortunately, many of the children who are in the Good Shepherd home were treated like slaves within these extended families. And Sister Jane saved them from that. But the little boy that I sponsor, who I call Nafi Ndika in the book, was with his aunt, and he was living there in the summer, and he spent all summer making these brooms and selling them. And when he came back to the Good Shepherd home, he gave all the money he had made to Sister Jane for his school books.
Mm.
She was very touched because she said, you know, you're the only child that did that out of all of them. And the money that he made from all of his work was equal to our quarter.
Wow.
A quarter.
The Reverend Canon Elizabeth Geitz is my guest today on Conversations. We're talking about her experiences with an orphanage in Cameroon, West Africa, and how people with passion can make a positive difference in the world. She writes about this topic in the book I Am That Child. Her website for more information is elizabethgeitz.com. There is a lot more to come on this issue on Conversations, so I hope you'll stay with us. Welcome back to Conversations. I'm Liz Summers. Thank you so much for being along with us this weekend. My guest in this half hour is the Reverend Canon Elizabeth Geitz, and we're talking about her experiences with an orphanage in Cameroon, West Africa, and a woman there who many consider to be the Mother Teresa of Africa, Sister Jane Monca, and this orphanage, the Good Shepherd Home, where children are being rescued from the ravages of poverty, AIDS, and sexism, and how people with passion can make a positive difference in the world, like Sister Jane Monca is doing, and also how Americans might partner with the people of Africa in ways that truly matter to help children such as these. Elizabeth Geitz is an Episcopal priest, the author of numerous books, and she writes about this subject in the book I Am That Child. Her website is Elizabeth Geitz, GEITZ.com. And if anyone is interested in sponsoring a child in Cameroon at the Good Shepherd Home, the website is goodshepherdhome.org. Elizabeth, before the break, you were talking about this boy, Adolphe, in the orphanage, who you were a sponsor of and who you wanted to visit in Cameroon. And this amazing orphanage where these kids have been rescued from a life filled with poverty and AIDS, and how these kids are filled with joy and each has chores and things they must do so that they learn responsibility along with their educations. Tell us just a little bit more about the children that come to live there. How are they selected? I know you said many children are AIDS orphans, or if they are at home, their parents are alive, they are mistreated or treated like slaves, as you said. Tell us a little bit about how are the kids selected then to be chosen actually to be able to live this very lucky life?
Well, the ones that are treated like slaves within their family are with extended family.
I see.
Their parents are dead.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of the children there have both parents who have died, usually of AIDS. A number of the mothers have also died in childbirth. This is an incredible statistic to me. One out of six women die in childbirth in Cameroon.
Wow.
So a number of the children's mothers died in childbirth. They're all orphans or abandoned. She has since started, since I was there, or I mention it briefly in the book, She has started a home for children with epilepsy or AIDS. Children with epilepsy are abandoned to die in the bush or on the streets. And those are also the children who are taken in. She tries her best not to turn anybody away. But most of the children that she receives are word of mouth. Somebody hears about her home, and they know about a child who is begging for food, and they bring the child there to her.
Are the children taught how to avoid getting AIDS, or is that a cultural taboo?
Oh, no, they are taught. In fact, I had a very heart-to-heart and honest talk with Sister Jane about that because I wanted to know. You know, I said, look, you've got teenage girls here. You've got teenage boys here. What are you teaching them about sex?
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of laughed and said, well, I'm a nun, and so they don't really listen to me. But she does have people, married women and men, that come in and talk with them about that and are very, very clear. And as she said to me, they all know what their parents died of.
Mm-hmm.
And they make it clear to them. Now, interestingly, when I first broached the subject, she felt she shouldn't advocate the use of condoms. And I said, why not? And she wasn't sure about that. And I said, look, do you want to raise these children up and save them just to have them go out and contract AIDS because you haven't talked to them about this? And as an American, as a Westerner, I think you have to be very careful when you broach a subject like this. But that particular subject I did not hold back on and was very, very clear. And she has followed suit. She's followed through on the different things that we discussed.
What happens to the children when they leave the orphanage? Do they go to boarding school? Or and along with that question is, I understand that Sister Jane doesn't want them to leave Africa. She wants them to be the next generation's leaders.
She does. She is convinced that the next president of Cameroon is going to come from the Good Shepherd home. And I wouldn't be surprised. The way these children are being raised is in a loving, caring atmosphere. She does not call them orphans, nor does she think of them as orphans. She thinks of them as her children. So where they go, the oldest ones today are 20 years old, and they're in university.
Wow.
And they have gotten accepted. She's got several children that are aspiring medical doctors, and I believe they will get there. Some are the top of their class. One boy, after the book was written, they found him literally in the bush hunting to live and survive and eat. And somebody brought him to the home, and he has been first in every subject, in every grade that he's been in. And there's no doubt in our minds that he will make it to be a doctor, as well as some of the girls.
And do you think they will
go to university? They go away.
Yeah.
But as she said to me, we're their family. They come home to us.
I was going to say, will they come back?
They come back.
Yeah.
They come back for vacations.
Oh, sure.
She said, I'm their mother. We're their family. This is where they come home.
Mm-hmm. How has your experience at the orphanage changed you, maybe the way you look at race and cultural privilege around the world? How has it changed you?
Oh, gosh, that's a long answer.
You
cannot be the same after experiencing something like this. I will say that I had the first blinders taken off my eyes when I worked in the inner city of my own country. I realized that we have a permanent underclass in this country, and my life of privilege really hit home to me. But when you go to a developing nation, you realize even more. I appreciated so much more when I got home. Things like smooth road to ride on in the car,
mm-hmm.
you know, silly things like that, food to eat, electricity that didn't go off in the middle of the night. But you also realize things that we don't have. As I said, the children and the people that I was around in Cameroon had a deep spirituality, a closeness to God, and an understanding of what really matters in life that I feel, unfortunately, we're missing in our culture sometimes. So I had a sense both of what we have and what we do not have.
The title of the book, I Am That Child, actually comes from Sister Jane. Just tell us a little bit about how you chose that for the title of your book.
Well, it actually comes from both of us. Sister Jane realized, going back to the beginning of our discussion, when she saw that child on the street in Yaoundé, she looked at the child begging to be saved and realized, I am that child. That could be me. Actually, Sister Jane's mother was an orphan, which we did not know until we had been there, you know, a good while. Mm. And she realized that. I also realized in interviewing these children and talking with them and getting to know them that pain is the universal language. Grief is the universal language. I've lost both of my parents, certainly not tragically like as they did, but I lost both of my parents. And I realized in listening to their stories that I am that child too. And what I would say is we're all those children. We're all connected. We're all part of one another. And that's one of the great learnings in visiting a different culture, very different than your own, is that we are indeed all one.
How can people in America partner with our neighbors in Africa? I mean, in ways that truly matter. How can we help these children, not only just these specific children, but so many other children that are living with the ravages of AIDS and poverty in Africa?
The last chapter of my book, I Am That Child, is called Joining the Journey. And in that chapter, I list 18 different ways that people can become involved. One is to actually become involved with the Good Shepherd Home by going onto the website, goodshepherdhome.org. But I also list out all the ways in Cameroon itself or in Africa that people can become involved through UNICEF, through the Peace Corps. If you have any young listeners out there, take a gap year. It's, you know, you can do that when you're between high school and college or when you're in college, and go and live in one of these countries. If you're older, as I am, and you can't go and stay over there for a year, then you can do what I did and take one trip. The purpose of the book is to take people on that journey with me so they can learn and experience things as I do. And there are very many different aspects that are covered in the book. And what I would urge people to do, and what I do urge them to do, is whatever part of that speaks to you, delve into it a bit further. Maybe you want to look at the parts of Joining the Journey that deal with infant mortality or maternal mortality or the AIDS issue. I've got all different ways of how people can connect and become involved.
What is ahead for the Good Shepherd Home? You said they've had been able to build a dormitory. What do you see happening in the next couple of years or maybe even 5 years down the road?
Well, what has happened since the book was written is that Sister Jane has started, and she now runs the largest chicken farm her region. She sold 10,000 chickens last Christmas.
Wow.
And she's got a number of self-sustaining projects, and that's very, very important. You know, as Westerners, we are not meant to come in and just give to somebody. That's not helpful to them. What we're meant to do is partner with them in projects that they can do to maintain their own livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got a chicken farm, she's got a pig farm, she's got a rabbit farm, she's got three vegetable farms, and a bakery that bakes 3,000 loaves of bread a day.
My goodness, what an entrepreneur.
Oh, she's a true entrepreneur in the best sense of that word. So that's what's already happened. The next thing on the horizon that we're working on is building the first Episcopal or Anglican secondary school and high school in Cameroon.
Wow.
And I'm in the process right now of raising money for that. She's in the process of buying the land, and we've got a pro bono architect, and it will be a residential school for orphans. They will be given preferential treatment, as well as those children who can pay. So there's no end to how many things can happen, and I believe will happen in the days ahead.
And more trips to Cameroon for you, I would guess.
I'm going in October.
Oh. Well, it's absolutely a fascinating book. I mean, I really did feel like I was there on the trip with you. If you would like to learn more about the work of my guest today, Elizabeth Geitz, you can go to her website, Elizabeth Geitz, GEITZ.com, or read about it in her book, I Am That Child. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Liz, thank you. It was delightful to speak with you, and I really enjoyed myself.
And thanks for joining us today. We'll be back again next weekend, and I hope you'll join us then. I'm Liz Summers. Conversations is a public affairs program of this station.